Meanwhile, this is Jeff.
This is Brett.
This is Megan.
And we're just talking about Star Wars: Dark Empire on the Skywalker.
What's up, Moof Milkers? Welcome to episode 3 of our Dark Empire miniseries. In this episode, we will break down issue number 3 of Dark Empire, titled
Dun Dun Dun.
Dodonna Summer. Now, that's not really it. We'll tell you what the real title is later. But before we do, social meteors. This is where the good Moof Milkers can find us on social media. On Apple Podcasts, search for The Skywalk. Sky as in sky, and walk as in the thing you cook in, spelled W-O-K. Subscribe there and please leave us a review if you like what you hear. Spotify, same deal, The Skywalk. Disgracebook, facebook.com/TheSkywalk. Twitter, @TheSkywalk. Instagram, The Skywalk. And Jeffrey, tell us about Podomatic.
Well, listeners, we want you to visit StarWarsOverCoffee.podomatic.com.
And all the other podcast platforms, Stitcher, Podbean, Radio Something or Other, etc. Welcome back to our Dark Empire miniseries. We have a couple of leftovers from our last episode before we dig into this next issue. A note regarding our maybe it's Palpatine joke. This joke about maybe it's Palpatine. This is a joke that we made eons ago in the very earliest days of our podcast. I don't claim that this is an original joke. I believe that I made it up at the time for myself, which doesn't mean that no one else has come up with the same exact joke. I just wanted to make that clear. And I think I've heard the same joke other places since then. It's one of those things that it's a logical conclusion that all of us will come to eventually. Also,
it was a great joke.
It was a great joke.
Thank you, guys. I'm not sure how I missed the phrase in issue number 2, the evacuation of Calamari. That sounds like something that happens in the midst of your meal at Polkari's. You're like, guys, I'll be right back.
Is that what happens when you mix calamari with ranch sauce?
I think so. Also, I don't think we acknowledge the fact that Mon Mothma performed the marriage of Han and Leia. I mean, is there anything she can't do?
Did she?
Yeah, she did.
Wow.
Wow. Do they even really talk about marriage in Star Wars? I mean, like, did they exchange rings? Like, what's the deal?
No, good point. What do they do?
What is it? Did they have like a formal ceremony?
Yeah.
How does it work? Did they have a maid of honor and a best man?
A good question. And who would be the best man? Would it be Luke or would it be Lando?
Ooh.
Good question. I would say it would have to not be Luke because he's Leia's brother.
Mm-hmm.
If you're family, like, you can't be the other person's best person.
Right.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
You're like, in the wedding party.
In most cases, like, you shouldn't be, like, I would never make my wife's brother my best man.
You
know what I mean?
Right. When it's an in-law, you're in the wedding party. In-law.
Not on your same side, but
that, like, makes in-law sense.
I don't think it's a hard, fast rule, but I do think it's a process of elimination. So,
but
like,
yes, I agree with you. Generally speaking, yes.
Right. One thing that we're trying to do
throughout
this miniseries is figure out whether or not we'd want Dark Empire back into the official, air quotes, Star Wars canon or not. So far, yes, we do.
Absolutely, yes.
Two thumbs up, yes.
I think we almost don't need to say this anymore. It's just a given.
Brett, just the fact that somebody took the time to create an action figure for the Dark Empire series.
Multiple.
That's crazy, man.
Yep, I totally agree, Jeffrey. All three of us loved issues 1 and 2. So without further ado, let's get into issue number 3. Talking about the cover. As we pointed out, Luke's hair is greasy. Mm.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'm zooming in right now. It's real greasy. Mm-hmm. He needs a shower.
Despite the ray of suds cascading down on his hair. So maybe it is Palpatine. More like dry scalpatine. Also, the cover is significantly different.
Okay, see, that, now we're beating the joke into a dead horse.
Guys, you see know, how I tried to move on?
I'm calling you out on this, Brett. It's too much.
You couldn't resist.
I tried to move on quickly from it so that you wouldn't pick up on that. But now, as we've been doing in each episode, it is time for our flowery, creative liberty-laden recap of the story of issue number 3.
Dun, dun, dun.
First of all, this issue is titled The Battle for Calamari. So apparently somebody didn't order enough.
And here's the thing. The reason why you fight over it is because nobody wants the little, you know, squiggly things at the end. They just want the circles.
Guys, I've never had calamari before.
Wait, what?
Oh. So
am I missing out?
Megan, I know, there's like that... a whole process.
True confessions. Calamari. Because you've never had calamari?
You got to have it at least
I haven't.
Once. Are you allergic to shellfish?
I'm not. I just never, like, I growing up, I didn't eat seafood that often. Or but I feel like now I want to try it. Especially after hearing you guys talk in so much detail about calamari.
That should be a selling point of the book.
So here's the thing. Like I can't eat mollusks or shellfish around my wife because she's completely allergic.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So... because of that, calamari has become a delicacy for me that I can only enjoy outside of her company. So,
which is like any time you watch a Star Wars movie, right, Jeff?
Right.
Let's get to the opening crawl. Here's something I really loved. It says, Brought to a sinister and beautiful world called Biss. Luke Skywalker finds himself the prisoner of Emperor Palpatine, now triumphantly alive. And guys, this is why I think that had they ever made this series into a trilogy of films, if this was the sequel trilogy, I think fanboys would have been very happy. Yeah. Mainly just that phrase, sinister and beautiful world called Biss. I think they're digging deeper and getting darker. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's growing with the audience. You know, J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy have talked about how when they, you know, restarted the franchise with The Force Awakens, they kind of wanted to play the hits.
Yep.
They wanted to go back to the vibes of the original trilogy. And the other point I want to make is that that's why I wish this had all happened in the 90s. I think that if you had... George Lucas needed a break after Return of the Jedi. That much is obvious, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let's say, I would say the sweet spot would have been 10 years later, you kick into the Dark Empire sequel trilogy. And you come into this. And that way, you're not just jonesing for the nostalgia. You're actually growing along with the audience. You know, you have the core cast 10 years older, but you're also going a little darker and you're giving people a little more. You're evolving the series instead of just kind of pining for a feeling that you had 30 years earlier.
When you read Dark Empire... it actually sounds like the movie that they forgot to make.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like it was basically the script that was written and said, okay, if we were to do a sequel trilogy right now, we would do this.
Right. Right. Lando and Wedge are on board the Rebel Star Destroyer Emancipator, which they stole. See issues 1 and 2. Also want to note that this series came out right after the first Iraq War. So the name Emancipator is pretty interesting. They're on board this Star Destroyer en route to Admiral Ackbar's home planet, Calamari, to take out the Devastators of Worlds, giant death machines intent on reducing all Palpatine opposing planets to rubble. And it's here that we happen upon the galaxy's first reality show, Very Calamari.
But bump. See, okay, so here's the problem with that joke, Brett.
Yeah.
I actually don't watch Bravo or E.
I figured Megan would know that shit.
You know?
Hey, I was looking at the photos. Can you repeat the joke?
Okay, I'm going to read the line again. This is good. And it's here that we happen upon the galaxy's first reality show, Very Calamari.
That is funny. Okay, I'm sorry. I wasn't giving it my full attention.
Oh, I love that. I
appreciate it now.
Brett, that was the best empathy laugh I've ever seen.
Yes.
Like Megan, that was on cue.
Yes.
I was like, oh, that That was funny.
I'm not sure I've ever appreciated someone's pity more than in that moment.
That was the best pity laugh I've ever seen.
No, I thought that was great, Brett. I'm into it. I'm sorry I missed it the first time around.
That reminded me of like when my professor would wake me up in art history class. They'd be like, what? Picasso. Yes, old Palpatine thought it'd be a great idea to transmit Calamari's destruction to the rest of the galaxy. By the way, in very Calamari, would Han Solo be Jay Cutler? I think he would.
Probably.
That kind of doesn't want to be bothered to do anything. Now, Lando, an actual war general, has a plan. He instructs his crew to steer their commandeered Star Destroyer uncomfortably close to whatever is TV transmitting the wanton destruction. They do just that, dropping out of hyperspace a mere stone's throw from Palpatine's super Star Destroyer named Allegiance. Allegiant Pride, anyone from Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker?
Hey now.
They catch this super Star Destroyer with its deflector shields down and unleash their full firepower upon it. This buys them enough time to release some X-Wings and transport to the real battle some of the rebels on the planet's surface.
Okay, so here's my thing. My hot take on this is, once again, you see them portraying Lando as a smart person who has a plan, who can figure things out, who actually has qualifications.
But what do you know?
Instead of, all right, instead of the plan of let's put horses on a ship and figure out if we can gallop past all the shooting lasers. Like, okay.
But Jeff, he used his charm. Oh, <my. laughs> Jeff, who else is dignified here? The rebel pilots. Here's a quote from the narration. Rebel pilots, their skills honed by years of relentless warfare, swoop unerringly toward the floating Calamari cities and the deadly world devastators. That's right, y'all. We've got skilled, experienced rebel pilots.
Yeah, but the only thing I heard there was floating calamari.
Me too. I can't get over the word calamari without laughing.
It's just messing me up now.
Floating calamari. That's like when you don't finish them all, but you put them in the sink anyways, and then you're
exactly.
The
it yeah. just floats to the top in the garbage disposal. Yuck.
Yep.
All right, go ahead.
Why do you think they picked the name calamari?
I don't
know.
Where
did that come from?
Have you seen George Lucas?
Oh, Brett.
What a burn, Brett. Damn.
That was the worst.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
Oh, he's on fire.
Apologies to George. You brought us our entire childhood.
You're just roasting his bratwurst, man.
The scale here is awesome. I think it's like pure spectacle. The devastators of worlds, they're not like the size of a Death Star or anything. Which is good, because you shouldn't repeat a Death Star. So instead, you've got some smaller ships, but they're still really big. They can still cause mass devastation. They're really cool to look at. And I think the artwork, again, is just amazing.
It's so good. A plus.
Then we cut to the crew of Devastator Silencer 7. So this is, again, an Empire ship. They've dealt with these rebel pests before. Pests that, quote, haven't the slightest chance of penetrating our defenses. We've heard that before, too. I want to point out in the artwork here, there's a purple-reddish hue for these guys in particular. And that's a really cool technique that they use. It's kind of a way to visually differentiate between ships. And that's something that Rian Johnson did in The Last Jedi. In the opening sequence, whenever they cut to scenes inside the dreadnought, everything's red. And the cool thing about it is, you know, whether you like it aesthetically or not, you at least know
where
which ship you're inside. You always know where you are, right?
It's
because there are other
key.
Ships involved, right?
Yeah.
Imperial Commander Clev is ready to unleash the Devastator's full destructive power. Get this, guys. He commands, quote, send a message to inform Supreme Commander Skywalker of their presence.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, guys, Luke Skywalker is now Supreme Commander Skywalker for the dark side.
Dang.
Well, and in here they actually show that he's responsible for the death of rebels.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, it's a crazy thought to have, man.
Ooh, Jeff, I didn't take that accountability yet.
Whoa, I didn't think about that either.
Like, now it's official.
They're killing rebels to make Luke happy.
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's got blood on his hands.
Meanwhile, the fish on the ground are feeling pretty good. They're winning the battle. And guys, I think it was great to actually see Mon Calamari warriors in action.
Defending their home world.
Yes. Says one such Calamarine, Admiral Akbar has not abandoned us. He's called down the whole alliance on their heads. But just then, the red tide starts to turn as one of the Devastators unleashes a fleet of fully robotic TIE fighters into the fray. These TIE fighters, by the way, they kind of look like an office product that you would buy at Staples. Mm. But I think they're really cool. I think that this book, I think that Cam Kennedy has a better understanding of the George Lucas, Ralph McQuarrie aesthetic and where it would have progressed to over 10 years than we get in modern Star Wars. That's just my opinion.
So you actually like the look of the new TIE fighters?
In this book?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Okay. I do. Those ones are okay. They're not great. But I do think it's better than just taking a classic TIE fighter and turning it black.
Okay. I mean.
We won't say who did that.
Yeah. You do have a point there, Brett.
But wait, it gets worse. The Devastators are now fully space functional. One of them leaves the planet's atmosphere in pursuit of Lando's stolen Star Destroyer and starts to dismantle it as it did the world below. Lando says, "That's two Star Destroyers we've lost. Man the escape pods." So Lando is to Star Destroyers as Ferris Bueller's friend Cameron is to Porsche's. And he's going to have some explaining to do when he gets back to the Rebel Alliance.
Well, he is working with stolen goods.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they're so expendable.
It's not too bad.
Then he says, "Things haven't been this bad for the Alliance since Vader was alive. Hashtag segue." Because then, little does he know.
Get ready for Vader.
At that very moment, Leia is receiving a vision, a visitation, if you will, from dun dun dun, Darth Vader.
Wow.
Or so it seems.
It definitely looks like him.
It definitely does. I definitely thought when I first read, I mean, I saw the picture below after, but I definitely thought that that was Vader visiting her.
And I think that's what they want us to think, right?
Well, especially because it goes from Vader when Lando is like, says Vader, and then immediately there's a photo of Leia and what looks like Vader, so.
Yes.
They're trying to trick us.
"Father," she asks, "is it you?" "Nah, yo, it's your bro, you know, Luke." I got a little tired writing the narration.
That fell flat. Keep going.
Luke basically tells her once again not to come looking for him. He reiterates that joining the dark side was the only way to literally save everything. She disagrees. She says, "You'll destroy yourself, and you'll destroy us with you." But suddenly, another presence seems to overshadow the vision of Skywalker, and Leia hears the sepulchral tones of the dark side. Jeff, do you think she's actually hearing the Emperor's theme, John Williams' score, in this moment?
If there was music, then yes. Everyone has a theme, right? Like that's to me, this was one of the cool things that I'm not sure I started noticing it in movies until I saw Star Wars. But that characters each have themes.
Yep.
The whole idea that one specific character can have a musical theme within a movie, mm-hmm. like, had just never dawned on me until I saw the series.
What does Palpatine's score sound like? Because I know, obviously, Darth Vader's, but I don't think I know Palpatine's. What
it sounds like somebody
sound like?
Humming. It's kind of like, like you have to watch the end of Return of the Jedi.
It's really good. That's pretty much that.
I'll watch it. Okay.
Jeff, you're saying I should leave that in?
You should leave that in. It sounds just like it.
It sounded beautiful, Brett. Definitely leave it in.
Here's what I don't think they should do, though. One of the few things I didn't like about Solo, A Star Wars Story, was when the Imperial theme, the Imperial March plays. Like a version of it plays.
It gets overused. That's the problem.
Well, it's played in universe, right? So Han is in this place that's like at once an airport and a Navy recruiting station for some reason. But they're actually playing sort of a remix of the Imperial March.
Which is like, come on, guys.
Yeah, that's kind of breaking the third wall or fourth wall. How many walls are there? Anyways.
Can I make a side note about the photo of Luke?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I love the artwork. I mean, obviously we like the artwork and all of it, but like his eyes are terrifying. And the fact that you can convey that much like
fear, and
it's pretty incredible. Yeah, that it's really awesome.
Oh yeah,
you show it to us, right? Yeah.
I'm looking at it again now. Oh, it's so fantastic.
It really is.
So good.
Meanwhile,
I was just trying to figure out where I was in the agenda. Okay,
I'm good.
Yes. Oh, guys, this is where I do my Palpatine voice again.
Oh god,
here it comes. Here it comes.
Yes, little Jedi, your brother has risked all. Dash dash, and lost. Big lightning zaps mood here, and Leia crumbles in a heap. Cue a humorous C-3PO entrance, which I really loved. Wonderful!
Wonderful!
Quote, meanwhile, unaware of his wife's distress, Han Solo instructs new recruits in the main hangar. Yes, we get it, guys. Han Solo is unaware. He's a dude, we know. And he's a married dude, which means he's twice as unaware as an average dude.
But, you know, okay, so here's the thing. This is where they've turned Han into this movie's version of Finn.
Yes.
You know, for these moments. Ooh. Like, I understand why Finn's character exists. But again, my critique on him is that he's always like that. Han is not always a bumbling idiot.
Right.
You know right. what I mean? So yes. They don't need to make him that way, you know, the entire movie.
To be clear, Han is only completely clueless when it comes to women.
Exactly. Which is what the way it should be. Right?
I sympathize, Han.
He is very clueless.
He's clueless.
It's pretty jarring, yes. Yeah.
But, you know, like, my point is, like, that's what makes him comedic, right?
Yeah. Right.
Because yeah. he's not supposed to be.
His mm-hmm. major blind spot you know? Is the one person he loves the most, right?
Right.
And this is typical dude, right? Han yeah. is showing the new recruits their new armada. So Han is right now, like, admiring new tech, mm-hmm. completely ignoring his wife's inner anguish.
So basically, Han is off playing video games while his yes. wife is taking care of everything.
Yeah. Even worse, Jeff, he's like, check out my new lawnmower. It's got 1800 BTUs. I don't know how those work.
My gosh.
He's showing the new recruits their new armada, which includes a dope new Imperial TIE fighter they got from a dissenting Imperial factory. Hashtag mm-hmm. backstory. Also, the Rebels got an E-Wing now. Which, when you look at the way it's spelled, spells Ewing. Which, does that mean the Rebels never win a championship?
Oh, snap.
But here comes Justice of the Peace Mon Mothma to break up the sausage fest.
Hey, now.
She informs the clueless Corellian of his wife's plight. Yes, Leia is laid up in the infirmary, recovering from her collapse.
Infirmary?
Infirmary? Did I say infirberry?
Is she wearing Burberry in the hospital? Is that what it is?
Probably. She tells Han again that the dark side is swallowing Luke whole. And that they need to find him. Mm. Lazy Han again objects and again responds to his bae with inconsiderate sarcasm. Notary public Mon Mothma chimes in with a juicy little nugget, quote, Luke is probably the last fully realized Jedi, General Solo. If he has lost, it may be over for the Rebel Alliance and the galaxy. And she kind of just said the last Jedi,
yeah.
but with a couple of more words yeah. thrown in, which is kind of cool. Leia informs Han that Luke is somewhere in the deep galactic core. She says, it's a very dangerous journey for all of us. So this is an area long sealed off by the Empire. But Han knows people. Classic Han. This kind of makes me think about our boy Larry Kasdan, who wrote The Empire Strikes Back, who co-wrote The Force Awakens. I feel like he would dig this. I feel like some of this dialogue and the way Han acts in this book, I think he would approve of as sort of the all-time resident expert of all things Solo. Oh, he also wrote Solo, Megan, in case.
Oh, did he?
Yes. Yeah. So the same guy wrote Empire Strikes Back,
mm-hmm.
co-wrote Force Awakens, and
yep.
co-wrote with his son Solo, A Star Wars Story. Also the same guy who wrote The Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Say what?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't realize that.
He's a good writer.
Like,
he is a good writer.
Why is he not getting a check from Lucasfilm on the reg right now? You know, like all the people they pull in, you know, why is Larry Kasdan not one of them?
So did you guys, I feel like I've asked this before, but did you guys like Solo? Because I know that it's like kind of controversial amongst Star Wars fans.
I liked it.
Mm.
And I have come to love it. There are certain things about it that I think could have been much better. I think it could have been, I've told Jeff this before, my dream, you know, if there's like one thing you could go back and redo, my dream scenario for this movie would be for J.J. Abrams to have directed this movie with Lawrence Kasdan's script. I think that when you think about the story of the movie, it's great. I don't think it was executed particularly well, mainly because the two directors were fired well into production of the movie.
And then was it Ron Howard?
Yes, yep. Ron Howard. Well,
that is random.
And so that's the other issue. That movie became another rescue project.
Yep.
Right. Yes. And anytime you turn a movie into that, it's just
So Leia and Han, they are ready to head off. And oh, General Ryken is there because he still exists. Remember, JJ? I love the humor here between General Ryken and Han. Ryken says, "Bring Skywalker back this time." Han replies, "We will, General Ryken. Believe me, I always get it right the second time." Again, great line. Very Kasdan-like line. That reminds me a lot of the exchange in The Force Awakens when Han is facing off with the Guavian Death Gang and Kanji Club. But anyway, great scene, great dialogue, vintage Han Solo, very Kasdan-like. Then Mon Mothma delivers another bombshell. "General Ryken, it is now clear to me that the future of the New Republic depends on the survival of the Jedi Knights. If Luke Skywalker is lost to the dark side, the Alliance is finished." Han and Chewie and Leia head off in the Falcon once again, this time to where, Jeff?
Now Hutta.
Birthplace of the now deceased obese tadpole known as Jabba the Hutt.
It's also the crime. Oh, and I've lost it.
Megan, this is why Jeopardy works. Null Hutta and its moon.
No. There's a word for it.
Crime capital.
I want to say crime capital, but it's like the crime boss capital of the galaxy.
You know who one of my favorite crime bosses is? The little mouse from Zootopia.
Yes.
I've never seen Pretty Zootopia. Good.
Watch Zootopia on Disney Plus.
Oh, okay.
Where's that paycheck?
Adding it to the list.
Yeah.
You're a good promoter for Disney.
Null Hutta is apparently full of huts, and its moon, Nar Shadda, is presently the center of smuggling activities throughout the galaxy. I think Shadda sounds better because Shadda sounds like something you did in high school by accident. It is an ungoverned... I know a kid who did that. He was laughing and, you know, calamari evacuation. Nar Shadda is an ungoverned derelict world, a lawless place. Common sense Leia fears there may be a price on her head for hog-tying Jabba's neck till his tail stopped flapping. But the ever-unflappable Han Solo is not concerned. I mean, when is he? Megan, this is why I say he might be the Jay Cutler of very Calamari.
Yes, I
completely unflappable.
Han says, "Yeah, I thought of that, but I've got friends here. This is home." Classic careless Han Solo. We meet Han's friend Mako, or Mako. Isn't that the girl from Pacific Rim? Yes. On the monitor, and he welcomes Han, but also warns him that the Hutts have indeed quadrupled the price on their heads. So every bounty hunter in the galaxy is looking for the Millennium Falcon.
So here's my thing. Like, at what point does raising the price even matter, right?
Yeah,
so
right?
It's like, first it's double the price, then it's triple the price.
No sooner does he warn them than they engage in a dogfight with pursuing ships. These ships are super cool, by the way. Again, evolution of Star Wars ship design is on point here. Guys, when I got to this point, I looked down in my physical copy of Dark Empire, issue number 3, and I saw the staples going down the center of these two pages. And I was like, holy moly, we're only halfway through this book. Which is when I knew I had written too much for this episode.
I think you need to speed it up, Brett.
So let's move it on. In order to outrun their pursuers, Han calls on an old friend, Shug Ninx. Is that like Shug Knight, Jeff? Who doesn't want to help?
So does this mean he's on Bounty Row Records?
Yes.
Can I just say that this character, what's his name? Ninx? Mm-hmm. I think he looks like, in the comic book, a combination of Mel Gibson and Ted Danson. Ooh. Can you see that at all?
Yes. I'm staring at it right now. He's kind of got like a grown out mullet too, if you notice.
Yeah, it's a really interesting hairstyle.
Yes, and the mustache, you're right, Megan.
And the mustache is like, looks like jewels or like rocks.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting look he's got going on.
Very so push-broomy.
It's, like it's like a combination of Lethal Weapon in Boston.
But also, I would argue you could probably put Tom Selleck in the role. Or now, you know who I would put in the role now? Kelsey Grammer. Ooh. Frasier himself.
Oh, okay.
Bringing it all together, because Donald Glover, who plays Lando in Solo, A Star Wars Story, said that he wanted to make a sequel that was like Frasier in space, which I was super on board with. Jeff, not so much when we talked about it at the time. Might have been in episode 47 of The Skywalk. Don't ask me how I know that.
Yeah, I'm still passing on that.
I would watch that. That sounds fun.
The art here is amazing, especially the Falcon interior shot at top right of this next page. Oh, top left, my bad. It is amazing. Cam Kennedy, jeez, dude. Dude does not lay off the gas.
So cool.
Also, a blazing advertising holoscreen masks the entrance to Shug Ninx's repair facility. Or it used to anyways, because they just flew through it with other ships in pursuit. It looks cool. Imagine the scene in Attack of the Clones, the Coruscant speeder chase, except done well. We also just found out that Han was raised on these mean streets in the Corellian sector of Nar Shada. Canon contradicted.
Yeah.
Because Solo, A Star Wars Story threw that out because Han actually grows up on Corellia in Solo, A Star Wars Story, which is now official canon.
Mm.
They arrive at Ninx's repair shop, which kind of looks like the repair shop in Mandalorian Chapter 6, The Prisoner, which I hate, but that's fine. He tells him, no one kills a Hutt and lives. Good storytelling here. I like that they are putting some steaks on the grill. And any kind of background character development that we get here, that's world building. You know, it's a world where there are scary, dangerous people and you have to watch what you do.
So, I mean, this is the other part of Dark Empire that I like is that it could totally be a video game too.
It'd be a fun video game.
Right? So like they give you enough content for it to be both.
Jeff. I would love that. I would even be okay with this. Here's the compromise I'm willing to make, right?
Wait, did I just blow your mind?
You blew my mind, Jeff.
I think...
Well, because I want this to be a series of films, and I know that's never going to happen. And
yeah,
I would...
but it could totally be a video game.
A video game could always happen. They should do it.
I would even be okay if, like, the video game picks up like this. Like, Han Solo is celebrating the Battle of Endor with Ewoks, slips on a banana peel and bumps his head, and we know this is all a dream. And I'd be totally fine with that. I'd be like, okay. I don't care if you tell me it's a dream. I'm still going to pretend it's real.
Bananas on Endor.
Just like we pretend Star Wars is real. It just happened a long time ago.
It's in a galaxy far, far away.
Actually, Han says, my wife did it. Referring to the slaying of Jabba the Hutt. Oh, sure. Now he wants to give her credit. When the guy tells him, no one kills a Hutt and lives to tell about it. Next, we're introduced to Sala, who builds ships, apparently. The ship she's building now is the Starlight Intruder. Megan, I like this particularly because it reminds me of the last proper Pavement album, Terror Twilight.
Oh, okay.
I feel like there was a song that had something like Starlight in the title, but I could be wrong.
I like the connection between Dark Empire and Pavement.
We've brought in Pavement. We've brought in Moonstruck. I mean, that played heavily in our last episode. We don't know where we'd be without Cosmo's Moon.
True. I'm watching Moonstruck later. Sorry, side note. I'm introducing my friend to Moonstruck. I'm very excited.
Oh, man. Ronnie Camilleri.
He's going to love it. He's really looking forward to Nicolas Cage's Wooden Hand. That's how I sold it to him. He was like, I have to see it.
That is like the secret star of the movie.
It's iconic, truly. I'd go to a museum just for that wooden hand if I could see it in person.
And I would buy a replica. Like, so I can wear
buy a replica. Right.
Do you know Empire Magazine did a list of like the top 100 movie props of all time a while back?
What's number one?
I think the lightsaber was actually number one.
A lightsaber?
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, they were saying how like it was basically the thing where everybody immediately wanted it. Like, you'd watch the movie and be like, if I could have one thing in life, it'd be that. I think hoverboards were very high on the list too, from Back to the Future too. I don't think they put Ronnie Camerari's wooden hand on there, and I think that was a big oversight.
Mistake on their part.
Yeah,
that should have been number two on the list. First lightsaber, two wooden hands,
and then hoverboard.
Yeah. So back, I'm sorry, back at it. So you were talking about Sala, right?
We're talking about the ship she's building called the Starlight Intruder. I can't tell if this is a good name or not, but the ship is registered for travel to the Deep Core, where Luke is. Deep Core, by the way, sounds like a Pizza Hut gimmick. It sounds like a pizza where the crust is in the middle and it's stuffed with cheese.
Yeah, that definitely is something Pizza Hut would do. Yeah.
Or didn't they do
it? I would eat it. If I'm being honest, absolutely.
You know who else would eat it?
Our friend Joe.
Our friend Joe would totally eat it.
Joe Diaz. He'd be on.
Did you see the pizza where the crust was made of bacon?
No.
Oh my God, no.
What did they call it? What was the name?
That's wild.
It must have had a great name, Jeff.
The Baconator.
Oh, really? I thought that was a...
No. I just made that up. But I did see the photo. I forgot what they called it.
Trademark dispute.
It was a bacon crust pizza, though. It was crazy.
Wow, that is quite something.
Unfortunately, the Starlight Intruder's hyperdrive isn't quite in flying condition yet. So that buys us a little more time for some character development. Also of note, Sala has some history with Han. She says Han, quote, walked out on her. Han quickly dismisses the charge. But Sala also calls him a scoundrel, so we know she's telling the truth.
Yep.
I really like her character, by the way. I think her look is super cool, and like I just like that they added her. She seems like a badass lady, and there needs to be more of those in the Star Wars universe.
Exactly. Representation. Like this is what I'm talking about.
That's right. That's Agreed. Right. There is a character also in the more recent Star Wars comics named Sana. And she's very similar.
Based on this person.
I do too, Jeff. I do too. Copyright free version of Sala, right?
Yeah, basically.
Disney did not have to pay Dark Horse for this one either. But enough lollygagging for Leia. She keeps the gang on task, reminding them that every second we waste, Luke falls deeper into darkness. Hold up, isn't that the name of JJ's derided Star Trek sequel? It is. I mean, anyway. Now, in a sequence that can only be described as Aladdin in space, and mind you, this book came out several months before Aladdin came to theaters.
Wait, that is a very good comparison.
Yeah. It's totally what happens here.
That is very accurate.
Aladdin in space. The clothing, everything.
Yep. But we can't blame them, because they did it before Aladdin, so I don't know. Han and Leia check out Han's old haunts, two levels down on this spaceport moon, a seedy neighborhood where bounty hunters abound. They come upon a street rat, creepy old lady who looks like she just drank from the wrong grail.
So basically you're saying she has chosen poorly.
Her name is Vima. She also reminds me of the creepy lady in The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
She's kind of like that, but she's nice. She's actually a fan of Leia. She knows Leia's a Jedi. In fact, she too was once a Jedi, but betrayed the Order, abandoning them to escape, quote, the Great Scourge. Jeff, do you think this is a reference to Order 66?
Yes.
The ordered murder of all of the Jedi, as seen in Star Wars Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, Megan. Vima then hands Leia something. What looks like a travel case for toothbrushes, something Vima clearly doesn't use anymore.
It kind of also looks like an iPhone.
Maybe that's what it is.
Doesn't it?
The earliest known iPhone, Megan. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Okay, fine. I don't actually know what it is, but it's a crusty little obelisk, I suppose. She declares Leia to be a great Jedi. She knows what's up. Han and Leia move on and finally arrive at Han's old bachelor pad, which looks like everything else on this moon, as in, like crap. And yep, he won this place in a game of Sabacc. What do you think of that, Jeffrey?
To me, it's not enough to say that you won the game in the game of Sabacc. You need to say what the hand was.
That's true. Yeah. A little too minimal a reference for you, Jeff.
Right. So like, I mean, it's like when you're playing poker, it's like, oh yeah, you know, I won this in a game of poker, and all I was holding was a pair of deuces.
It all comes full circle with the evacuation of calamari.
I'm just saying.
Han's old droid ZZ is here too.
Okay.
And seems to be stuttering and muttering nonsensical statements like, "Fzzz, a Mr. Fett to see you, sir." Han replies, "Mr. Who? What the dash dash? Dun dun dun."
Mr. Fett. Who says Mr. Fett? Come on.
Mr. Fett? I know. What is this, Downton Abbey?
Since when is Boba Fett distinguished? That's never, all I got to say.
Never distinguished. But wow, I did not see that coming. And guys, I want to tell you something. Something that you don't see in the digital version for some reason is a little text box at the very end that appears in the physical copy that tells you the name of the next episode. I'm going to show you right now. Can you read it?
I can't read it. No.
Yeah, I can see it.
I can see it, but I can't read it.
Next, Boba Fett's revenge.
Oh.
The bounty hunter.
Han's droid ZZ is not short-circuiting here. Apparently, Boba Fett is back in play. What this indicates to me is that at this time in the early 90s, they were really on top of what Star Wars fans really wanted, which is like a sequel trilogy. And they also wanted some better closure for Boba Fett, because Boba Fett, when he appeared very briefly in Empire Strikes Back, became the absolute top fan favorite. Everybody thought Boba Fett is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And then you wait around 3 years for Return of the Jedi to come out, and Boba Fett dies the most inconsequential death of any Star Wars character ever.
No, that's not true.
Maybe at the time. Maybe at the time.
At the time. But Captain Phasma takes the cake.
Yeah, but nobody ever thought she was cool. That's the difference.
Okay. Right? All right. I take that.
Us kids, we had 3 years to think like, oh man, all the cool things this dude's going to do in the next movie. And then he literally, Megan, when he gets swallowed by this pit, the thing burps. Like...
like for no reason.
His eulogy
is a burp. Poor Boba Fett. He kind of looks like a cool Power Ranger, like a fancy Power Ranger.
Yeah,
but that's real. I'm excited to learn more about him in the next comic.
By the way, y'all, there's a series of comics from back in this time that were illustrated by Cam Kennedy, all about Boba Fett. Guys, overall assessment, what did you think of issue number 3?
I liked it a lot.
I liked it. I thought the beginning was amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure about the ending.
Yeah, I agree. And the ending is a little bit middling, but I think it kind of makes sense. This would probably be, again, if this was a trilogy, this would be the middle of the second movie in the trilogy.
Yeah. There we go.
So if you picture Empire Strikes Back, at this point in Empire Strikes Back, they're just kind of floating around in an asteroid field hiding from the Empire.
It's a great moment.
Which is not totally unlike what they're doing here.
Mm-hmm. It's a great moment, Brett, to go to the bathroom and come back.
Intermission for Jeff.
Intermission for the movie.
I agree that the end was, I wrote some notes when I was reading it, and I wrote, that's the end? That's it?
Yeah.
Because I was kind of, I don't know, I was clicked to the next page and was like, that's it? Yeah, I was surprised.
What would you frame from this book? We've talked about how stunning the art has been in this whole series. And what I love is a lot of comics, past and present, start out looking great, and you can tell the artist gets a little tired. Mm. And I don't think that's happening with Cam Kennedy. I also think that these books, I think they took more than a month. I think they were spaced out a little more than your typical monthly series, which maybe gave Cam Kennedy a little more time to put some love into the artwork.
I mean, for me, it was just the vision, where Leia is having the vision of Luke with Luke Skywalker. That is definitely something I would frame and put up.
I'd probably say that. Or Ninx, because he's such an interesting looking character. I could always think of Ted Danson. I could hang him up on my wall. He was dreamy on Cheers.
Okay, all right.
We've come to the moment where we get to look for the first time at the cover of issue number 4.
Give it to us.
I'm excited.
We're all going to see it at the same time.
Drum roll, please.
Issue number 4.
Wow.
Oh, snap. Oh.
Some Han and Leia action.
Are those new ships? What are those?
That is Leia.
Next to the Millennium Falcon.
All right, so we're going to describe this for the Moof Milkers listening at home. So it looks like you have these two big hangar bay doors
that are
opened up to reveal a portion of the Millennium Falcon in the background. Mm-hmm. To the sides of these doors, you've got a couple ships. On one side are pretty standard looking TIE fighters.
Yep, I see those, yeah.
On the other side is another ship, which again, looks like a much better evolution of Star Wars design by Cam Kennedy than what we saw by J.J. Abrams in the sequel trilogy. Then in the bottom, oh, Jeff, did you see who's down there? So you guys are right. You got Han and Leia on one side. On the other, Jeff.
Boba Fett and IG-88.
And?
And?
Jeopardy moment.
Dash Rendar.
No. Rhymes with Dash Rendar. It's Dengar.
Dengar. Okay.
Megan, these are Boba Fett and two of the other bounty hunters that appear towards the end of Empire Strikes Back that were hired by Darth Vader.
Specifically to find Han.
To find Han and Leia and Luke and Chewie.
Oh, wow. I'm excited.
This is awesome. Like, so everything that I've loved about the series so far was that it was kind of a growth from the original trilogy. Mm. It was kind of taking you new places that are kind of, you know, wild and fantastic. This is the most traditional, I would say. Like this could have fit in right in smack in the middle of the original trilogy.
Oh yeah,
definitely.
Absolutely.
But man, it's beautiful.
It is.
I mean, it almost looks like a still out of Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, it totally does.
I like that every cover is so different too.
Yes.
Each one has had like so many different colors and each character has been, I don't know. I'm excited.
Different, but like the detail is still similar, you know?
You can tell it's the same style.
Same artist. Mm-hmm.
Very different flavors. And I think, again, that's what makes it feel so epic. That's what makes it feel like it could be an actual trilogy in the Star Wars saga. Guys, next time we'll be considering this book, Boba Fett's Revenge, issue number 4 of Dark Empire. So if you're a Moof Milker listening at home, get on it. Get yourself a copy digitally on Comixology for $2, man.
Good deal.
$2 for an amazing Star Wars adventure with some of the best Star Wars comic art you'll ever see in your life.
This is Jeff.
This is Brett.
This is Megan.
And we're just talking about Star Wars Dark Empire all the time on the Skywalker.